Oh, man, it's so good to see you guys this weekend. And for those of you who are tuning in online, great to have you join us wherever you may be right now. And we're in week number 3 of this series called Leading Through 2021. We're looking at 3 essentials for leading through times of disruption and uncertainty. I think we all can agree that we've experienced quite a bit of that over this past year. Now, for many of us, this has been a challenging year, right? I mean, I think I don't have to tell you that. But for some of us, it's just been outright brutal. And we're just trying to like pick up the pieces and try to figure a way out to move forward. And the challenge is that for so many of us, it's not just about getting us moving forward, but we've got people looking to us and they're wanting us to help them move forward as well. And so as we've been saying through this series, you know, whether you're a parent or maybe you're a manager or a business owner or you lead a nonprofit or maybe you're a school administrator or a teacher, you know, whatever your role in leadership is, regardless of how big or how small, people are looking to you. And they're looking to you for hope, they're looking to you for reassurance, and they're looking to you and I for inspiration. And, you know, I don't have to tell you this, but nobody prepared us for this, right? I mean, nobody prepared us for going through a pandemic, you know, with the difficult economic, you know, turn and teetering on the edge of economic meltdown while we're going through a lot of social unrest in our country and an election season. I mean, all of that together, at least for me, has been a new experience. And so, you know, again, it's not enough to focus on how do I get myself through that, but there's a whole lot of people in my life I'm trying to help get through that as well. And so that's the tension of every single leader, right? I mean, that's a tension, whether you're a mother or a father who's trying to, you know, just parent on your own, or you're a leader of a nonprofit or a small business and you're trying to just keep things afloat, or, you know, maybe you're the CEO or you're an executive and every time you get into the Zoom window, all eyes are on you. And everybody's looking for, you know, some assurance and some hope and that we're going to make it. And so, you know, we don't have all the answers. We've been saying that through this series. And if we're honest, we don't even know what we're going to do next sometimes. I mean, don't tell anybody. But if we're honest, we're navigating and figuring it out as we go. And so there's certainly quite a bit of uncertainty. That's just a normal part in the world. But that uncertainty is why leaders like you and like me are needed in times like this. Because your family needs you. And your company needs you. And our community needs you. So we're gonna jump into kind of the third installment on this, and if you missed either of the first couple weeks, man, you can go back to our website, crosspointweb.org, and there's a button right at the top of the website that says Previous Weekends, and you can get all caught up there, and I would highly encourage you to do that. Now, today, we're going to look at this third essential, and this one is so important, especially in times like these that we're in right now. Because we're going to look at the importance as we lead others in displaying our humanity. Displaying our humanity. We have to show that we're human. We have to show kind of a transparency and that we care. And we have to kind of exercise, you know, our empathy muscles. In fact, in light of everything we've gone through, not only over the last couple weeks here in our nation, but if we're honest, over the last year, I mean, all the uncertainty that the last year and the pandemic has brought, displaying our humanity is probably more important than ever right now. Now, I was very moved this week. I don't know if you saw this episode, but Tuesday evening, there was a national prayer service, kind of a national memorial service for COVID victims in our country that our nation's leaders put on. And I just happened to check it out, and I was very, very moved by it. In fact, as I kind of watched it, I didn't realize how important that moment was until I got a text from one of my friends that actually sent me an interview with someone shortly after that I'm going to show you in just a second. And this interview is from a Princeton professor, a guy by the name of Eddie Glaude. And he, not only what is said there in terms of what he shares, but just the roles you and I can continue to play as we help our whole country get through this pandemic, but also this important theme and this important idea of how do we continue to process our unprocessed grief. And so take a look at this interview.
On the topic of unprocessed grief, on the topic of all the hurt, on the topic of the disregard that not wearing a mask and not abiding by the couple things we could do, staying a safe distance apart, not gathering in people's homes, wearing our masks, allowing ourselves to acknowledge the loss and feel the pain of the loss seems like a good step in the right direction to getting the nation to do the right things.
You're so right. You know, I'm thinking, as I listened and watched, I'm thinking about my good friend Charles Upshur. He died yesterday. of COVID died yesterday. And, you know, the selfishness that has kind of suffocated the land was held at arm's length for a moment. We've needed a national ritual to mourn so that we can think about the mourning. And then for a moment, just listening to the words and the song and seeing the lights, President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President Harris pulled the grief and regret out of the privacy of our hearts, if just for a moment, so that we all could share it. Cardinal Gregory put it powerfully, sorrow unites us, you know? We needed this ritual because the dead weren't settled. People didn't die right, Nicole. And coming out of my tradition, when folk don't die right, they haunt. So, you know, I'm thinking of Charlie when he would slice that golf ball and cuss at the top of his lungs, or we would sit down and smoke cigars and talk about how bad we played and how good we would play the next round. And thinking about all of those folks who, just for the moment, the nation shared their grief. Oh, what a first step. What a beautiful step. So I'm going to, you know, I'm reminded of the psalmist, you know? He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. Maybe the death will speak to us now. Maybe they can rest now.
Man. You know, our sorrow unites us. There's something about our sorrow being kind of pulled out of us. And you know, the people who are looking to us, the people who are looking to us to help them get through this season, they need to experience your humanity. And here's why. Because see, when I'm convinced that you know how I feel, I'm more open to your influence. I mean, when you acknowledge, you know, and kind of legitimize my feelings and my grief and the loss that I've experienced, you know, when you don't ignore it, when you don't downplay it, when you don't, you know, just kind of brush it off or criticize it, when you, you know, kind of show that you're aware of the things that I've experienced or that my family's experiencing in those moments, I feel legitimized. Otherwise, I resist you and I resist your influence. And I resist you because you don't understand me. And when you don't understand me, then, you know, I don't feel like you get me. In fact, I heard a recent podcast by one of the nation's kind of leaders, you know, with leaders in our country, with businesses in our country, kind of the number one leadership voice right now in our country, a guy by the name of Patrick Lencioni. Maybe you've heard of him. He wrote the book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And he was on a podcast with Dr. Andy Stanley, and Dr. Stanley asked him a question. He said, you know, Patrick, what are you telling, you know, leaders in our country? What are you telling business leaders right now? Like, what's your message? And he said this. He said, basically, I'm telling them, leaders, listen, you need to be human. You need to be human. You need to check in often. You need to, you know, be present when you're in the midst of conversations. You know, nobody's ever left your company because you checked in too often. Nobody's ever left your company because you over-communicated. And here's why this is so important in this season that we find ourselves in right now. It's because empathy in the context of leadership, I mean, not just empathy in general, but empathy in the context of leadership, it's there for the purpose of building trust. I mean, it's the very thing that builds trust. And so the very people who are depending on you and depending on me, that they through empathy, they begin to trust us enough to follow us. Now, there's actually a biblical term for this. It's probably a term that you're familiar with. You've seen it. In fact, you've even seen it today. You've heard it in our service already this weekend. And it's the term pastor. Now, when you hear the term pastor, you usually have like some kind of religious connotations with it. Or you think of people like me. When I hear the word pastor, I think of my dad. I think of my grandfather. I don't think of myself. It's a word I've had a bit of an interesting, you know, connection with. But nonetheless, it's a term that I, you know, take on. Now, what's interesting about this is the word pastor is actually from the Latin language for the word shepherd. And in fact, the word pastor should have never ended up in our English New Testament, because the translation of the English New Testament came from the Greek language. But see, the scholars who were translating, they actually inserted this Latin word in place of the Greek word, and this idea of shepherd actually turned into pastor. And you might say, well, why would they do that? That's a great question, and it's a story for another day. But see, back in Jesus' day, get this, back in Jesus' day, pastoring and shepherding, it wasn't a title. It wasn't like a label. It was a function or a behavior. Right? It wasn't a church office as we often see it as. And here's why this is so, so important, especially in the time like we're in right now. Because see, when there's disruption, when there's uncertainty in your homes and in your workplaces and in our communities, people need to be shepherded. Because not because they're sheep, I mean, but they need to be shepherded because like sheep looking to their shepherd, they need to hear things from us like, hey, we're going to make it. We're going to get through this. Things are going to be okay. And they're looking for protection and security and reassurance. And so, you know, if you lead in any capacity, regardless of how big or how small, shepherding, pastoring is a part of your responsibility. And I know you may be thinking, well, Kurt, that's easy for you to say because, like, that's your job, right? Like, you're a professional, like, shepherder. You're a professional pastor. Like, that's what you do. But I'm just a teacher. I'm just a department chair. I manage a team, you know, in a department. Or I'm a trainer. I'm not a pastor. And let me just say, I get it. I mean, I totally get it. I know it's my title. But I just want you to know, it does not come easy to me, all right? The whole idea of pastoring does not, it's not really wired into who I am. I'm a much better thought leader. I'm a much better creative leader. I'm a much better entrepreneur, builder, starter than I am pastor, all right? And I'm not necessarily proud of that. I'm just kind of being completely authentic with you on that. Pastoring, the pastoring aspect of leadership that comes with the role that I'm in, it doesn't come natural to me. I'm learning, and I continue to learn what it means to pastor. And I know I lost a few of you right here because you're a business owner, you're a business leader, and you're like, yeah, I'm driven. I'm about starting and progress, and I'm not about touchy-feely, checking in on how everybody's doing. I get that. I get that that may not be how you're wired. All right, I get that. But I want to share an experience with you, and hopefully this might be encouraging to you. You know, back in the early days of Crosspoint, when we were, you know, in our first year or so, there were only two full-time people on our staff, and we had a whole bunch of volunteer leaders. And if you've been around here for any time at all, you've probably heard me talk about leadership assessments, and we really put a lot of weight in knowing our leadership wiring, and I'm a data guy, so like that stuff carries a lot of weight for me. And so early on, we did a full assessment of our staff team, which was just two of us full-time, and then a few volunteer leaders. And our consultant met with us, and he said, okay, you know, some good news and some bad news. He said, the good news, I guess, or the bad news, is that you're both like a high D on the DISC profile, if you're familiar with DISC profile. If not, he basically that means you're driven, and you guys are both like high achievers and highly competitive and very results-oriented, which is awesome. That's why Crosspoint's got off the ground, and it's where it is right now. But the question you're going to have to wrestle with is, who in the heck pastors people? Because you guys don't have a carrying bone in your body. And I was a little offended, if I'm honest. And I'm like, you know what? He's actually right. Like, it just doesn't come natural to me. And so, you know, and let me be clear. Let me be really clear. Just because it doesn't come natural doesn't mean I don't have responsibility in that. My responsibility is to make sure people are cared for. And so, you know, the cool thing is since day one here at Crosspoint, I mean, Crosspoint's been set up from the very beginning with this model of biblical community where as a community we care for one another. This is why you hear us talk about small groups so often and why we're so adamant about getting people into small groups, because this is where care happens. This is where you know and are known. This is where you love and are loved. This is where you get cared for. I mean, if you really want to be in a place where people care for you, get in a small group, because it's best when it happens in community. It's the way God designed the church to work. And so somehow we've just shifted this idea that only the paid professionals do the pastoring, but it's really designed this way. And as Crosspoint's grown over the years, we've realized we do need somebody on our team that, you know, does wake up and think about how do we care for people and set up systems and equip people to care for others, and that's AKA Mark Johnson. That's why one of the reasons and purposes Mark does on our team, he's part of his role is pastoral care, of helping this community care well. Now, why do I tell all that to you? Because what I'm about to say next to you, this doesn't come natural to me. I just want to be really clear. All right, but here's the thing. In times of disruption and in times of uncertainty, we have to sometimes interrupt our own patterns. Even our patterns and our temperaments that lean us a certain way. And we have to step into, even if it doesn't come naturally, the pastoring and shepherding role. Because this may not be the thing that people need the most, but think about this. It's the thing that in times like we're in right now, people need first. And see, it's so easy, and I'm telling you from experience, it's so easy to kind of step behind the things that we're comfortable with. It's so easy to kind of, you know, hide behind the busyness and, well, here's the things I do really, really well, or I'm just not wired that way. It's easy to do that, but here's the thing, great leaders do what needs to be done. And in times of disruption, people need comforting, they need reassurance, and they need pastoring. And so whether we're comfortable with this whole idea of shepherding people or pastoring people, the bottom line is we got to turn that leadership asset up in our leadership mix. Now, here's what I can tell you from experience. If you do this, and when you do this, it will be awkward at times. It really will. I mean, there's going to be moments where like, okay, I don't know that I'm helping. I mean, there's moments where I used to do hospital calls quite a bit, and I think people, when I left, were more uncomfortable than when I showed up. And I'm like, that's not a good idea, you know, when I'm like seeing them and they're already uncomfortable in the hospital. But here's the thing. When you show up, people are thankful, even if it's not a strong suit. And they appreciate you stepping out of your comfort zone in order to bring comfort to them. And see, according to Jesus, this is what great leaders do. In fact, Jesus talked about this all the time. He about putting others first. In fact, there was a moment where Jesus and his apostles, they'd gone through an extremely stressful season of ministry. And a very hands-on ministry where they're healing people and laying hands on people and, you know, holding babies, the whole deal. And so Jesus and the 12 apostles, they decide they need to kind of slide away for a bit of a break. And so Peter, he tells this to John Mark. John Mark is like the Gospel of Mark. Pretty much the Gospel of Mark is Peter's story. Peter and Mark sat down, and Mark's like, I need to hear everything that happened. And Mark just wrote the accounts of what Peter experienced. And so here's what Peter told Mark about that moment. He said, so they went away. All right, so this is meaning the 12 apostles and Jesus. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. So they decided, hey, we got to get away. It's been incredibly busy. We need a little rest, and we've got to get away from the crowds. But many who saw them leaving, this is so amazing right here. Think about this. Many who saw them leaving on the boat, they recognized them, and they ran on foot from where they were, the towns that they were in, to get ahead of them. And they actually met Jesus and the 12 apostles where they were going. So basically, the crowd got to where Jesus was going before Jesus got there. I mean, that's how much people wanted to be around Jesus. And then something really interesting happens next. It says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he got back in the boat and went to a more solitary island. Actually, that's not what it says. That's what I would have done. I'd be like, Julie, this is terrible. Like, I need a break. I need to be a place where there's not people. That's not what Jesus did. You know what Jesus did? Take a look at this. It's so amazing. It says, when Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, remember, he's tired. I mean, they've been working hard. They're stressed. They're worn out. When Jesus saw the large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like, look at this phrase right here, sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. Man, this is so powerful right here. So Jesus leaned in and moved in their direction. And you know the rest of the story. At least you've probably heard it. He spent so much time with them right here. Guess what happened? They all missed dinner. And so he did what a good shepherd did. He went out and got some food and fed all 5,000 men plus the women and children. He fed all of them because that's what shepherds do. And then later on, another gospel writer, the Gospel of John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. So John, he describes for us the behavior of what a good shepherd does. And this is so instructive. It's so intuitive. And so, you know, you might just want to take note of what the posture is that John describes right here, especially those of us who are parents, those of us who are leaders, those of us who maybe have a role where other people, their eyes are looking to us. This is the posture he tells us to take, and he shows us to take as we help others get through difficult times. He says, he calls his own sheep by name and he leads them out. He says, this is what a good shepherd does. And when he has brought out all of his own, he goes ahead of them and his sheep follow him because, and look at this last phrase right here, because they know his voice. Now, what I'm about to share with you next is so important. So, I mean, if you've kind of dialed out for a second, just tune back in for a moment. This is so important. During times of uncertainty and disruption, your voice is more important than your words. In times like we're in right now, your voice is way more important than your words. I mean, your voice is an expression of your humanity. All right, and so, you know, an email is not enough. A text is not enough. People want to hear your voice. All right, emails and texts, those are for normal times. But in times of disruption and uncertainty like we're in right now, you've got to find a way for people to audibly hear your voice. And so when you're tempted to text, just pause for a moment this week and go, okay, you know, I ought to give them a call. And guess what? It's probably going to go to voicemail anyway, right? I mean, half the time people can't pick up their phones. So you're probably just going to be able to leave a message, but leave a message. Because see, when you leave a message, or even if you get the chance to talk, it communicates something. It communicates that you care. It communicates empathy. It shows you're genuinely interested. And so I always have just been operating off the principle that, you know, call someone even if you can't call everyone. And we've talked about this here before at Crosspoint, all right, that we should always, as leaders, look for an opportunity to do for one what we wish we could do for everyone, right? I mean, think about that for a moment. Always look for an opportunity to do for one. You may not be able to call every team member. If you have a large team in your work, you may not be able to call every single one of them and spend the time on the phone. All right, but call somebody, check in with somebody, find somebody who you know is struggling, check in with them and do it by a call. All right, and you know, and let me just say, when that voice comes in your head and says, well, I mean, since I can't do it for everybody, I shouldn't do it for, you know, just one person, resist that. All right, that's stupid. All right, don't try to be fair in these moments. All right, you need to be engaged. In fact, why do we think that? Have you ever wondered, like, why do we think, like, if I can't do it for everyone, then I'm just not going to do it at all? Why? Do you know where that comes from? Because I think I do. I think when I was a kid, I mean, I grew up in a large family. If you grew up in a large family, you may have, you know, heard it there, because there were a lot of mouths to feed. If you know, when you were a kid, if your school is like my school, there were certain days of the week where you got like dessert with your lunch. You remember those days? And like sometimes when you go through the line, like they'd give you your portion, and if there was some left, you could go back up. Or at least I tried doing that at times. I'm like, hey, could I get another dessert? And you know, what would the lunch lady often say? She's like, well, you know, if I give it to you, then I've got to give it to everybody, right? And so I think we got in our mind that if I can't do it for everybody, I shouldn't do it for anyone. That's stupid. All right, you need to engage. We have to engage even if we can't do it for everyone. Now, I want to remind you, this does not come naturally to me. But I've been growing in this. In fact, I saw a picture of this a few years ago that I want to share with you. And it was somebody who behaved very pastoral in a sports and entertainment industry. In fact, if you are a race fan, then you may know the name Doug Bowles. He's the president of Indianapolis Motor Speedway. He's a graduate of Butler University, grew up right here in Indianapolis. And Doug Bowles, when he first took over, you know, being the president of Indianapolis Motor Speedway back in 2012, that was a season that had a lot of uncertainty, a lot of disruption in the racing industry. And so he just began to give soft touches, and I'll never forget this moment. I heard him on an interview one day talking about one of the first things he did was he told his assistant, I want two or three names every week on my desk with phone numbers of people who have been ticket holders here at the Speedway. He said, I'm just going to call them on my way home when I have windshield time. I'm just going to call them, and I'm going to thank them for being ticket holders, and I'm going to just see if they have any questions. And he began to call people. Now, I've been a ticket holder for like 31 years. I haven't got a call, and I'm not bitter or anything. I'm just saying. I'm really not. I just think it's the coolest thing. I haven't got a call, but I think it's the coolest thing that he still calls people on his way home just so people can hear his voice and to say, hey, you're valued. So I kind of took a lead from him earlier this year, late last fall. I said to my assistant, I said, Amy, would you give me, you know, a couple names of our leaders, of some of our small group leaders? We've had care teams calling people that aren't in groups and or aren't in volunteer teams, just checking in with people. But I said, yeah, I want to check in with our leaders. And so she started just feeding me names every week, a couple names, a couple phone numbers, and I'd call on my way home. When I had windshield time, I'd make a phone call. And really, I had two things in mind when I did it. Number one, I wanted to hear my voice to say, hey, I'm here, I care. And then number two, I wanted to say, hey, how can we pray for you? And so that's what happened. And you know, if I'm honest, it was a bit awkward. I mean, there were awkward moments. I'm an introvert by nature, so I'm not like a huge small talker. So, you know, I'm kind of like right to the point, and it always didn't go exactly smooth, you know. And so, in fact, that's why we don't do it, right? We're like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about, so I might as well text. It's a lot easier to text, but that's a mistake. In fact, I could cover those two questions or those two goals in like the first 60 seconds, right? And it was interesting because, you know, usually the leader on the other side of the the phone after, you know, a little talk and answering, you know, how they're doing and what I could pray for. They're like, oh, man, it's so nice of you to call. Like, so what can I do for you? And I'm like, well, that was it. I mean, there's nothing else. And they're like, really? Oh, I thought you like needed something. I thought that's who you were calling. I'm like, no, that's seriously. I was just calling for those two things. And then they're feeling awkward, right? Because they're like, oh, I mean, I'm not saying the only reason you call me is because you need something. It's just that I don't usually get calls from people who don't need something. Think about that for a moment. And usually it ends with, well, oh my gosh, it was so nice of you to call. AKA translated, it was so nice of you to care. Now, I can't do this for everyone at Crosspoint, but I can do it for one and for three. And so again, resist that temptation that just because you can't do something for everyone, all right, choose to do it for one. Now, if you're a Jesus follower, it kind of goes beyond this, all right? Because if you're a Jesus follower, I mean, this goes beyond just like good leadership etiquette, right? Because Jesus goes on. In fact, verse 11, look at what he says. He says, I am the good shepherd. Now, for Jesus followers, when we read this, all right, we see that. And we're like, oh, man, Jesus is like in a category all by himself. But that was not his goal right here. All right, he says, I am a good shepherd. And for those of us who are followers of Jesus, think about this for a moment. If Jesus was willing to step into the role of shepherd, it wasn't a title. It was a behavior. It was a posture. If Jesus is willing to say, hey, I'm willing to take on the role of a shepherd, those of us that are followers, if we're going to follow Jesus, then that means we kind of got to take on that role as well. And then what he says next, I'm going to tell you, you're going to do a double take on this because I do every time I read it. I've read this next line probably hundreds of times and I still go, whoa, exactly, is that exactly what this means? Look at what he says. He says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. And I'm like, all right, I don't think I quite want to be that good a shepherd, all right? I mean, I'll be a shepherd, but I don't know that I want to be that good a shepherd. But listen, here's the fortunate thing for you and me. I don't think this, for most of us, this is not going to mean anything literal. What this simply means is the good shepherd puts the sheep first. And the sheep know it. When the good shepherd steps out of his comfort zone, out of her comfort zone, the sheep, guess what? They feel comforted. Now the point, what I'm saying is fathers, just take some time to be dad. Mothers, just take a few minutes each day to be mom. Business leaders, managers, administrators, just take a few moments to take the authority hat off and just be human. And to use Jesus' words, he's like, don't be a hired hand, meaning don't just be there because you got to be there, because you're supposed to be there, you're paid to be there. I mean, Jesus says that the hired hand isn't in it for the sheep. In fact, the hired hand, let's just look at what Jesus says. He says, the hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. In He goes on. He says, so here's what happens. When he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep. And guess what he does? He runs away. And you're like, why would he run away? Well, Jesus tells us. He says the man runs away because he's a hired hand and he cares nothing for the sheep. He's not in it for the sheep. And he doesn't stick around when things get tough, when things get uncomfortable. And so when uncertainty and disruption hits, when the wolves begin to howl, guess what? Here's the thing we got to understand. Your presence, my presence, your willingness to show up is everything. It's everything. Now, if I can be honest as a leader, as a father, I struggle sometimes. I struggle showing up when I'm like, you know, I don't have anything new. Everything's kind of the same. I don't have any new updates. I don't have any new solutions. I don't have any new breakthroughs that are going to change everything. And so, I don't know if I need to show up. But that's a mistake, see? And this is why this is so difficult, because so many of us, we're solution people, right? We're progress people. And we're like, why would I pull people together if I'm not going to tell them anything new? You know why? Because in times of uncertainty, let me say it again, in times of uncertainty, our presence, your presence is everything. And so for me as a father and as a husband and as a leader, even as a boss, there's a question that I've kind of been using. And I want to give you this question, because if you're somebody who other eyes are looking to help get through a season or get through the season that we're in right now, I think this question might be helpful to you. And it's really our responsibility to ask this question. And here's the question. Do people know? Do people know that I care? Like, do the people who I'm responsible for Do they know that I care? I mean, you know you care, right? But do they know that you care? Or here's another way to put it. Is your humanity showing? Now, as we wrap up, I want to tell you a story that involves President Obama. And if you're a Democrat, you're going to love this story. And if you're a Republican, you should love this story. And I'm not saying you should love it because you should love him or you like him. I'm saying you should love it because I think we're mature enough that we can learn from anybody and everybody, right? Even if we don't agree with them. And so for the next four minutes, I just want you to put your political filters aside for a moment. Because this incident in his presidency, it just kind of punctuates the importance of our role as shepherd and as pastor in moments when there's uncertainty and in times of disruption. And in this case, in this moment, in the midst of unimaginable tragedy. Now, I don't know if you've ever visited a friend or family in a moment when they lost a child and had to walk into that environment immediately after the loss. You know, as a pastor, I've walked into way too many environments like that. And I can tell you, there are no words. There's no words to share. And there's just nothing to say, especially and even more so if the loss of that child was unexpected or if it was sudden. There's just nothing. There's no solution. There's nothing you can say in that moment that makes anyone feel better. But imagine walking into those circumstances in that environment 20 times to comfort 20 families all on the same afternoon. That was a situation that President Obama found himself in by choice following the Sandy Hook school shootings back in 2012 in Newtown, Connecticut. In fact, on the morning of December 12, 2012, you may remember this, 20-year-old young man, he breaks into a school after the doors had been secured, and he shoots 26 people, including 20 children, before he takes his own life. Now get this, the oldest child who died was 7. Michelle Obama, she says, it was the darkest day in the White House. In fact, in her memoirs, she said, when I walked into the Oval Office, Barack and I just embraced silently. There was nothing to say, no words. And she said, you know, as a fact guy, that's how she referenced him. She said, as a fact guy, he wanted a full briefing. He wanted all the details. He wanted to know exactly what took place. Now, Joshua Dubois, he was the spiritual advisor to the president at that particular time. And in his book, The President's Devotional, he describes the Saturday afternoon when President Obama called him and said, Joshua, I want to go meet with all 20 of those families, and I want you to go with me. And so Joshua described what took place that day when they arrived. He shares this in his book. He says, we prepared 7 or 8 classrooms for the families of the slain children and teachers, 2 or 3 families to a classroom. The president took a deep breath, steeled himself, and he went into the first classroom. And what happened next, I'll never forget. He said, person after person received an engulfing hug from our commander-in-chief. He'd say, tell me about your son. Tell me about your daughter. And then he would hold pictures of the lost beloved as their parents described their favorite foods, their favorite television shows, and the sounds of their laughter. For the younger siblings, those who had passed away, many of them 2, 3, 4 years old, way too young to understand, he said the president would grab them, he'd toss them in the air laughing, and then he'd put them down and he'd hand them a box of White House M&Ms. He said, in each room, I saw his eyes water, but he did not break. And then, the entire scene would repeat itself for hours. Over and over again, through well over 100 relatives of the fallen, each one equally broken and each one equally wrecked by the loss. Wow. Joshua said that he and the president flew home that afternoon. And President Obama didn't say a word, and even to this day, has never mentioned these sacred moments in public. And probably this is the first time you've heard them. It was the first time I read them. Now, here's why I tell you that story. because it takes our excuses away. Totally takes our excuses away. I mean, that moment when President Obama became the pastor in chief, when he became the shepherd in chief, not because he claimed a title, but simply because his behavior in that moment, he chose to take off his authority, and he behaved in a way, and he did something that cared and became human to the people at their very point of need. Think about this. He could have got away with a handwritten note. Who wouldn't have wanted a handwritten note from the president? He could have called every family on the phone. He could have gathered them all together in one gathering and just kind of in one, you know, fell swoop, you know, kind of shared his condolences and then hopped on his jet and flew back to the White House. But he didn't. He waited in because that's what the moment called for. And so I want to ask you a question. This is really our next step this week. Who needs to see more of your humanity in this season that we're in? Who needs to see it? Who needs to see more empathy? Who needs to see that you care? Who needs to hear your voice? Who do you just need to call? I mean, you may not be able to call everyone, but who are the one or two or four or 10 people you just need to get on the phone with over the next few days, weeks? And here's what I'd leave you with. If you're someone or who has a bunch of someones who are looking to you to get through and navigate this season, listen, I know you want to get this right. Just like I want to get it right. And let me tell you, I believe you can. And it starts. It starts with showing our humanity. So that's what we're going to do this week. Let's stand. I'm going to pray for us as we head out and do this week. God, thank you for this moment. Thank you for this picture of Jesus showing us what it means to be a good shepherd. Not only showing and modeling it to us, but actually calling us to follow and be in the same posture. And you know, better than we know, that we're going through times like we have never experienced. And we have eyes looking to us, sometimes little eyes, sometimes older eyes, sometimes a few eyes, in many cases a lot of eyes. People who are looking for us to help them get through and to help them see that we're going to get through this and we're going to get through it together. And so I just pray that you'd help us to know what to do with what we've heard and what you've put on our hearts. You know, help us know what to do with the places where maybe someone in our circle needs to see our humanity. And we pray that as we do that, we'll resist the temptation. Resist the temptation. Say, well, since I can't do it for all, I'm not going to do it for one. May we do it for one. And we know that when we do, you're going to be there. And we thank you for that.